running out of time here, so I'll go ahead and get right started. In the opening prayer, Mr. Seeker mentioned that the state of this world is going downhill pretty fast, and he had mentioned the need for God to take care of us. This sermon is very similar. It's really about us taking care of each other. I've entitled the split sermon, Go and Do Likewise. Go and Do Likewise. Some of you probably know where we're going to go from there. This here was a quote that I came across as I was doing some research for the sermon. It's from an author. He writes children's books and some young adult literature as well. His name is Charles DeLint. Here's a quote that I thought was interesting that kind of fit in with this sermon. It says, I don't want to live in the kind of world where we don't look out for each other. Not just the people that are close to us, but anybody who needs a helping hand. I can't change the way anybody else thinks or what they choose to do, but I can do my part. A couple of weeks ago, I was driving up from the middle school over to the high school for a meeting, and oftentimes I'll listen to the news or NPR or something just to kind of reset the brain before you got to go and listen to the bosses speak for several hours. And there was a topic on the radio that caught my attention. So I turned it up, and the overarching theme of the particular radio segment was the psychology of helping. More specifically, what they were trying to answer was the question of why do people help others? Why do people help others? That was really what they were talking about. So we'll get into that a little bit later. That's a little bit of foreshadowing of what we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. Poppin mentioned the Christmas season. He had mentioned about surprising the boys at times of things that he used to do as a child, and he surprised us last night at dinner by singing us a Christmas song. I won't give you the full context of that, but we'll let you fill in the blanks there. So many of you know one of the things that I used to do as a kid was I had a friend who's Seventh Day Adventist growing up, Matt. A lot of you know him because he's been to services with us. Him and his dad own a tree business, and one of the things that they would do is cut down trees, and particularly this time of year, they would cut down Christmas trees. Them being Seventh Day Adventist, they would not work on the Sabbath. So they hired me to sell Christmas trees on the Sabbath. Pork hot dogs selling Christmas trees on the Sabbath, I don't know which one's worse. So, brethren, we are moving away from the so-called Christmas season. We can now turn on the radio without hearing jingle bells or here comes Santa Claus, Silent Night, you name it, Frosty the Snowman. We don't have to check our toe tapping, our humming along, because they're catchy tunes, and you know, you catch yourself singing along. We don't have to worry about that anymore because we are now moving away from that. Not too long ago, the boys and I were driving home. I don't know where we were coming from, basketball practice maybe, and a song came on the radio, and immediately Mason started singing. And I was singing to myself silently, not out loud, but Mason was just blaring it out, and I was kind of singing to myself, and I'm listening, and I said, Mason, turn that off. Stop singing that song. That's a Christmas song. He says, it is, and he quickly turned it. So these songs, they get in our heads, and, you know, you don't even realize it. That's Satan has created really, really catchy songs to try to bring us off track of what we're supposed to be doing. Well, the Christmas season, the Thanksgiving season, it's not just a time for singing songs and presents and that type of thing. You'll hear a lot of people this time of year talking about helping others, being charitable, giving donations. There's really no other time of the year from Thanksgiving to Christmas where people give more than they do this time of year. There was an article in CBS Money Watch. It's a Money Watch report. And this is a little excerpt of what they said. It says, does the holiday season usually make you want to count your blessings and give back in some way? If so, you're not alone. Some 40% of charitable donations are made during the last 6 months of the year, a period known in the philanthropic world. I don't like to put big words in there because I usually can't say them. Period known in the philanthropic world as the giving season. In all, Americans donated more than $373 billion to charity last year, which is equivalent only to about 2% of our U.S. gross domestic product. Brethren, people give a lot this time of year. But only this time of year. What does God tell us about helping other people? Hebrews 6, verse 10. Hebrews 6, verse 10. It says, beginning in verse 10, it says, God is not unjust. He will not forget your work and the love you have shown for him as you have helped his people. And here's the key, and continue to help them. For you have helped his people and continue to help them. So we know it's nice to give during Thanksgiving. People tend to be more thankful and understand their blessings and maybe give a little bit more than other times of the year. Christmas time, the same thing. But if we look at Hebrews 6, verse 10, it's not just these couple of times a year that we're supposed to help others. It says, help his people and continue to help them. So there's really not a season of helping. It really is all the time. In college, I had a roommate that was a big Harry Chapin fan. He was a singer and a songwriter, and he had the box set, and he could not go to sleep without listening to Harry Chapin CDs. So over the course of 2 years, hearing that box set, I don't know, however many days there are in a year, all night long in his CD player, I got to know some of his songs. Well, Harry Chapin, he was, like I said, a singer and songwriter, and he spent a lot of his money and a lot of his time to combat world hunger. That was kind of his cause in life, along with singing. He sang a song that was called Thanksgiving. And at the beginning of the song, there was a big, long commentary that he gave before he actually started into the music. And the whole commentary was about these canned food drives that schools do and churches do between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And he talked about how wonderful it is to bring in the canned foods to help these families so that they would have a meal at Thanksgiving and have a meal at Christmas. And he went on and on about how wonderful that was. And then he paused. And he paused for a moment and he said, the problem is, what are these people going to do next week? We bring in all these food items, we bring all of these canned goods for Thanksgiving and Christmas meals, but what do these people do next week, was his question. And then before he got into the song, he kind of put the onus on schools to fix the problem. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to cancel classes next week. We're going to come up with a reasonable solution to make sure that these people have food every day, not just a couple of times a year. And then he kind of goes into the song. The concept is, people like to help at certain times of the year and not on a continuous basis. That's what God intended for us, is to help on a continuous basis, not just a couple times a year. He doesn't want us to help sometimes. He wants us to help always. We should be helping today and continue to help in the future. Now, I know we have a lady that shows up at services every now and again, and you know, kind of a disheveled woman and not the most pleasant woman to eat next to, I know. Some of us kind of shy away from her. However, are we supposed to help her when she comes in? You know, she's disheveled, doesn't always smell the nicest, doesn't keep herself up, but she comes in for a meal. Not one of us have ever turned her away from a meal. We fix her a plate, we talk to her, and then normally one of us end up driving her home. Is that what God expects? Is that what he expects? In Galatians 6, 9, I won't turn there, but that is exactly what God expects. God tells us in Galatians 6, 9 to do good to all people. To all people. Not just some. Not just some. He wants us to love one another and to show kindness. The Greek word for kindness is Christos. Maybe that's how you say it. It's C-H-R-E-S-T-O-S. C-H-R-E-S-T-O-S. And part of that meaning in Greek is useful. It means to be useful. In order to be useful, that requires some sort of action. You can't be useful if you don't do anything. So part of that Greek word for kindness means to be useful. In 1 John 3:18, it talks about action. It talks about doing something. 1 John 3:18, it says, dear children, let us stop just saying we love each other. Let us really show it by our actions. Let us just stop saying that we love each other. Do something about it. It's basically what God is telling us there. I know I use this story on occasion when I have kids in my office that come in and say they're sorry for getting in trouble. They're really only sorry because they got caught. That's really the big issue. But I tell them, don't say you're sorry. Don't tell me you're going to do it. Show us. It's all about the actions. If you truly are sorry, you change your behavior. So action here includes some kind of self-sacrifice. Sometimes it's generosity on our part. Sometimes it's just giving of our time. What I'd like to do is go back to the NPR program just for a second regarding the psychology of helping. So during the program, the host, and they had a couple of guests that were on the program, they were talking about a study that was done by two Princeton psychologists. The title of the study was From Jerusalem to Jericho. From Jerusalem to Jericho. So based on the title of the sermon and the title of this study, many of you probably know where we're going to go here in just a moment. We're going to look at the parable of the Good Samaritan. But before we look more closely at the study, let's take a look at the Good Samaritan parable. So if you turn to Luke 10, we'll read down through there here in just a moment. But we know that in this account, the lawyer in the story wanted to know what he needed to do to inherit eternal life. Now, since this man knew the law, he was a lawyer, he most likely had other motivations because he probably knew the law. He probably knew the answer as well. He was trying to put Christ on the spot. He may be an attorney or a lawyer trying to find a loophole in the law. Maybe he was trying to justify his own behaviors with his question. And technically what he was looking for is, you know, who do I have to be nice to? Who is my neighbor? Is the lady that comes in off the street my neighbor, or is it just the people that are sitting here on a weekly basis? So he was looking for a loophole. So let's take a look at Luke 10, verse 25, and we'll read through the parable of the Good Samaritan. Luke 10, verse 25, it says, On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law, he replied. How do you read it? Well, Christ was good. He was very good. When people tested him, when people asked him questions, oftentimes he would fire right back with another question. He wasn't going to get caught. That's a trick that I sometimes need to learn as well in leadership, is you don't always have to have an answer like that. Turn it around. What do you think? What do you think? So Christ said, what is written in the law? How do you read it? Verse 27, he answered, Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, and with all of your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. Verse 28, Christ still doesn't give an answer. You have answered correctly, Jesus said. Do this, and you will live. Well, the lawyer wasn't happy. He wanted to test a little bit further. Jesus praised him for his correct answer. But again, still looking for a loophole. Verse 29, he says, But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, Who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? So here's where Christ gets into the parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, a parable is a powerful story. It has a lot deeper meaning than sometimes we first read on the surface. A parable was told by Christ because what he said in Matthew 13:11, when they said, you know, why do you speak in parables? I sometimes joke about Papa speaking in parables because he will tell a story and sometimes the boys just look and say, what is Papa talking about? I said, Papa talks in parables sometimes. So Christ spoke in parables because he didn't necessarily want everybody to know what was going on at the time. He said, you know, this message is for you. It's not for them to know right now. But parables, they have a lot of deep meaning. If you just read the surface, you'll get something out of it. You'll get the moral of the story. But looking deeper, we get so much more out of it. What a parable should do is it really should cause us to change our thinking. When we read those, oftentimes we can see ourselves as some of the characters in the parable. So let's look at verse 30, Luke 10, verse 30. In reply, Jesus said, A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now, the road from Jerusalem to Jericho is definitely known as a very dangerous road. A lot of robberies. It was a treacherous road. And he got beat by robbers and was attacked and left half dead. In verse 31, it says, A priest happened to be going down the same road. And when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So here's a man on the side of the road, half dead, a priest, a religious man who no doubt understood the law, understood the requirement to love your neighbor. Not only did he not stop to help the man, he went to the other side of the road. He got as far away from him as he possibly could. He didn't stop to peer to see if he was okay. He went to the other side of the road. In verse 32, it says, "So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he didn't help either. He passed to the other side of the road." Again, another religious man of the time, probably knew the law. He failed to help. Verse 33, "But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him." Verse 35, "The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.'" Christ was very deliberate in the characters that he chose for this parable. The two men you would have expected to help, the priest and the Levite, they walked right by. The Samaritan, on the other hand, probably would have been the most least likely character at the time to help, because the Samaritans and the man was most likely a Jew. They didn't like each other. That was the man who stopped and helped. It's also important to note, if you read through this quickly, you know, a lot of people say the Good Samaritan stops and helps. But if you look at what he did, what extent did the Samaritan go to make sure that this man was okay? He didn't just stop and check on him and send for help. He didn't take out his cell phone and call 911. Maybe they didn't have cell phones then. The boys would have no idea what that would be like. But he didn't just, you know, send for help. He didn't get on his donkey, ride off, and then send somebody back to help him. He stayed with the man. He used expensive, at the time, oil and wine would have been expensive. He used those expensive oil and wines to clean the wound before he bandaged them up. He put the man on his own donkey, which means he probably then was walking. He was probably walking then. He took him to an inn where he gave the innkeeper 2 denarii, which at that time was probably most likely about 2 days' wages. It would have been pretty expensive. He also told the innkeeper that he would stop on his way back to pay him for any additional charges that may have taken place. Brethren, the Samaritan was clearly on his way to do some sort of business, yet he stopped to help that man in need. He stopped to help. Not only did he sacrifice his time, but he also sacrificed a good portion of his money. A good portion of his money and his resources. Let's finish up the parable in verse 36. Christ now asked the lawyer another question. Remember his first question, "Who is my neighbor?" Christ fires back with another question. "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" The expert in the law replied, you know, I kind of picture him maybe with his head down a little bit, talking kind of quietly, not real proud of himself. "The one who had mercy on him." I can see Mason saying that when he got caught doing something. "What happened, Mason?" He kind of drops his head and answers. So the expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Go and do likewise. Brethren, the message is clear. We're to help others, not just those that we like, not just when we have the time and the money to do so or the resources to do so. We're to help everyone when they are in need. Luke 6, verse 32 talks a little bit more about helping. Luke 6, verse 32. It says, "If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you?" It's pretty clear you're going to love those that love you. That's easy. "Even sinners love those who love them." Verse 33, "And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that." Verse 34, "And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full." Verse 35, here's the key, "But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful." See, the Samaritan didn't expect to get anything in return for helping the man in need. He was merciful. He just did it because. I think of myself, most of you know, not too long ago, somebody stole our canoe on Friday night. And as I was putting this together, I wondered to myself, you know, what if I saw that man on the way to church? He was broken down, kids in the car, my canoe in the back of his pickup truck. Would I have driven by, called the police, or would you have stopped to help? I don't know. I would like to think that I would have stopped to help, but clearly a man that at the time was kind of an enemy, right? Somebody that clearly didn't love me and the boys and our excitement for fishing out of the canoe. He just took it. Don't know. I wonder about those things. So let's turn back to the Princeton study just for a moment. So again, the psychologist wanted to test the people's goodwill. Why do some people help and why do some people not help? So the first part of the study, they wanted to determine if thinking religious thoughts would influence somebody's willingness to help. Would having a religious background and religious thoughts influence their ability to stop and help? See, what they understood is that religious teachings, we focus on generosity and compassion in helping others. The people in the study were students in Princeton, and they were studying to be ministers. So clearly they had an interest in the ministry, interest in religion. And what they were told is that they were going to give a 3 to 5 minute talk about being a minister. Some of the students were simply asked to prepare a talk that outlined some of the simple jobs of being a minister. What does it mean to be a minister? That's what they were going to talk about. The other group was told to incorporate the parable of the Good Samaritan into their 3 to 5 minute talk. Both groups were given some time to prepare for their little speech, their little talk. And after they had worked for some time, somebody came into the room, told them that the room was double booked, that you're going to have to leave. That you're going to have to leave and then walk over to where you're actually going to give your talk and you can finish up over there. Some of the students, half of them were told that you got plenty of time, you know, take your time getting over there. You got to get out of here, but they're not ready for you over there. You got plenty of time. Go on over, finish up your talk, and then we'll call for you when you're ready. The other half were essentially told you need to hurry up. They're waiting for you. You got to get over there and get going. So one of the groups had no worries about time. The other group did. One, you might say, was on Jamaican time. No worries. The other may be New York City time, Mr. Seeker. Running here, running there. The researchers then placed a person in need in the path of both groups, keeping in mind that both of the groups included people that were studying to be a minister. So they placed somebody in the path that was in need of help. They were simulating some sort of a medical emergency. They had no choice but to where they placed the person to walk right by them. So the person was hunched over on the floor, calling for help, and then, like I said, the students needed to walk right by them. So the question is, would the students who included the information about the Good Samaritan stop with greater frequency than those that didn't? Would those students that were in a hurry, would they stop less frequently than those that were on Jamaican time? No worries, had plenty of time. What would happen? And again, keep in mind that all of these people were like the priest and the Levite. They had a religious background. They were finishing up their studies to be a minister. So the researchers found that having just read the parable of the Good Samaritan had absolutely no difference on their ability or willingness to stop and help. No impact. So what they found is that it was consistent basically with the priest and the Levite failing to stop. They knew what was right. They chose not to do it. What they found was the thing that mattered the most was not whether or not you knew what you were supposed to do. They all knew what they were supposed to do. They knew they were supposed to stop and help somebody in need. Time was the key. The people that were on Jamaican time, they stopped and helped much more frequently than those that were in a hurry. So the question is, brethren, do we have the time or are we too busy to help? I ask myself that. Occasionally, are we too busy to help? I know we run here and we run there, but clearly we're taught that we do need to stop and help. The parable of the Good Samaritan did not teach us to help when we had time. It didn't teach us to help those that we liked. It told us to help all the time in the people that we don't necessarily like. The man that stole my canoe who's broken down. You're supposed to stop and help him. 1 Peter 3:8. Again, I won't turn there. 1 Peter 3:8, where you are told to be compassionate and tender-hearted. Be compassionate and tender-hearted. What better way to show compassion and be tender-hearted than helping a person in need? Brother, many will read the parable of the Good Samaritan and come away with the general moral of loving thy neighbor and helping a person in need. This is certainly a good lesson to learn. However, as I mentioned earlier, Christ spoke in parables so that only a few would truly understand their meaning. There's always a deeper meaning. The character he chose is important for us to understand. The fact that the religious leaders at the time, the priest and the Levite, did not stop is important for us to take note of. It's also important for us to take note of the person that did stop, the Samaritan. Samaritan Jews did not like each other. See, when Christ told that parable, the people at the time probably would have expected the opposite of what happened. They would have expected the priest and the Levite to stop and the Samaritan to walk on by. So there's a deeper lesson there, brethren. Martin Luther King Jr. gave a lot of speeches. Martin Luther King Jr. Day coming up here in a couple of weeks. One of the speeches that he gave is actually the speech he gave right before he was assassinated. It was titled, "I Have Been to the Mountaintop." And there was a commentary about the speech prior to the actual transcript of the speech from somebody that was writing an autobiography about Martin Luther King. And he said, "I've been to the mountaintop, and like many of King's speeches and sermons, it illustrates his knack for taking famous Bible stories and brushing off the dust that has settled on them. In this speech, he looks to the well-known story of the Good Samaritan." And then Martin Luther King, in the beginning of his speech, he basically goes through the parable of the Good Samaritan. Here's what he said in his speech. He said, "One day a man came to Jesus and he wanted to raise some questions about some vital matters of life. At points he wanted to trick Jesus and show him that he knew a little more than Jesus knew of and throw him off base. Now that question could have easily ended up in a philosophical and theological debate." It's not what Christ did. Christ didn't debate with him. He simply just threw a question back at him. Martin Luther King continues on and said, "But Jesus immediately pulled that question from midair and placed it on a dangerous curve between Jerusalem and Jericho. And he talked about a certain man who fell among thieves. You remember that a Levite and a priest passed by on the other side. They didn't stop to help him. Finally, a man of another race came by. He got down from his beast, decided to be compassionate, and helped the man. He administered first aid, and he helped the man in need. Jesus ended up by saying, this was the good man, and this was the great man, because he had the capacity to project the I into thou and to be concerned about his brother." He continued on to say, "Now you know, we use our imagination a great deal to try to determine why the priest and the Levite did not stop. At times we might say that they were too busy. They were going to church meeting. They were going to a gathering. They didn't have time to stop. At other times, we would speculate that there was a religious law that one who was engaged in religious ceremonials was not to touch a human body 24 hours to the ceremony," referring to not touching a dead body and being ceremonially unclean. He continued on to say, "And every now and then, we begin to wonder whether maybe they were not going down to Jerusalem at all, or down to Jericho, rather to organize a Jericho Road Improvement Association." And then in parentheses, laughter. This is the transcript. Martin Luther King told a joke. "That's a possibility. Maybe they felt it was better to deal with the problem from the causal root rather than to get bogged down with an individual effect." And here's where he talks a little bit about the road. It says, "But I'm going to tell you what my imagination tells me. It's possible that those men were afraid. You see, the Jericho Road is a dangerous road. I remember when Mrs. King and I were first in Jerusalem. We rented a car, drove from Jerusalem down to Jericho. And as soon as we got on the road, I said to my wife, I can see why Jesus used this as the setting for his parable. It's a winding, meandering road. It's really conducive for ambushing. You start out in Jerusalem, which is about 1,200 feet above sea level, and by the time you get to Jericho, 15 or 20 minutes later, you're about 22 feet below sea level. That's a dangerous road. In the days of Jesus, it came to be known as the Bloody Pass. And you know, it's possible that the priest and the Levite looked over the man on the ground and wondered if the robbers were still around. Or is it possible that they felt that the man on the ground was merely faking? Was he acting and ready to rob and seize us rather than us helping him? And then he kind of goes on and on a little bit more. But here's the key that I thought was interesting. A question that Dr. Martin Luther King asked. He said, "But then the Good Samaritan came by and he reversed the question. If I do not stop and help this man, what will happen to him?" So rather than thinking, what will happen to me if I stop and help? He said, if I do not stop and help, what will happen to him? That's the question before you tonight. And he was giving a speech to some sanitation workers. He said, if I stop to help the sanitation workers, what will happen to my job? If I stop to help the sanitation workers, what will happen to all the hours I usually spend in my office every day, every week? That question is not, if I stop to help this man in need, what will happen to me? The question is, if I do not stop to help this sanitation worker or the man in need, what will happen to them? And he finishes by saying, let us rise up tonight with a greater readiness. Let us stand with greater determination. And let us move on in these powerful days, these days of challenge, to make America what it ought to be. We have the opportunity to make America a better nation. Donald Trump, I think, says, let's make America great again, right? Brethren, God gave us the parable of the Good Samaritan to teach us the importance of having a helping attitude. The account starts with the two great commandments. Love God and love your neighbor. Brethren, we know that we cannot have one without the other. It's not possible to separate the two. You cannot love God and leave the man on the side of the road beaten half to death and not stop to help him. And you cannot love your neighbor without loving God. Brethren, we can help in many ways. It does not need to cost money. Like the Samaritan using over 2 days' wages to help. It doesn't have to cost money. It does not have to be providing first aid in a situation where you think you're going to be harmed. The Samaritan didn't have the cell phone, but we do. You know, we could simply call 911 if we felt unsafe. But what we can't do is be like the priest and the Levite. Cross to the other side of the street, out of sight, out of mind. If it's out of sight, out of mind, we don't help. That's something that we can't do. Matthew 5:14, as we come to a close. Matthew 5:14. Again, not an unfamiliar scripture to any of us. It says, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Brethren, why do we help others? We don't help others to see our name in the paper. We don't help others hoping that we get a reward from the thankful recipient. That's not why we help others. If we read the end of Matthew 5:16, it says, may your good deeds glorify your Father in heaven. Brethren, we help others because we're expected to. We're expected to let our light shine. And we also know that when we do this, it glorifies God. Simple things. It doesn't have to be big things. We can help in simple ways. Mason, not too long ago, demonstrated a helping attitude. I was impressed. Very thankful that he did this. He had a student in his class that had Tourette syndrome. Hadn't been in class a long time. And Mason, he'd been talking a couple days about this kid. And then out of the blue one day, he said, you know what? I'm going to go over and visit him. The kid lived in the neighborhood, not a couple streets down from us. And never heard Mason really talk about this kid before. But he said, you know, Daddy hasn't been in school. I'm going to go over and check on him. So he got on his bike. He rode over there. And he spent a good amount of time at that boy's house. He let his light shine. It was a simple thing, but I'm sure it made a big difference to that kid to know that somebody from his class was thinking about him. Another simple thing that Jackson did when we were at the Great Wolf Lodge. There was this mother, had a little baby in her arms, and she had, I don't know, there were two or three, two kids, two smaller kids. And the tubes that you have to take up, they're you know, as far as I can reach. And these two little kids are trying to muscle that tube up there. And mom was trying to decide, all right, do I try to go up with these kids in the tube and hold the baby in my arm? What do I do? And Jackson looked over and said, can I take that tube up for the two kids? The mother just smiled and gleaned and was just as happy as anything, thanked them for doing it. It was a simple thing, but was it a helping attitude? Brethren, as we come to a close, God tells us in Matthew 5:42 to give to those who ask without turning away. So when the lady comes in, asks for food, we give her a meal. We don't turn away. But we should also remember to give to those who don't ask as well. Sometimes people can't ask, they won't ask, but you know, we're to give to them as well. We know the law, we understand the parable, we now have a responsibility to act, which most of us do. But when time becomes of the essence, sometimes we may drive by, leave the guy with my canoe in the back standing there. But we're not supposed to. We shouldn't act like the priest, we shouldn't act like the Levite, but as the Good Samaritan. So, brethren, Jesus ended his parable of the Good Samaritan with a very simple statement. Go and do likewise. Brethren, let us too go and do likewise.